Hello and welcome to this podcast, Being a Clinical Director in 2020, The Highs and Lows. My name is Dr. Pauline Foreman. I'm a GP in Watford and the Medical Director for Primary Care Development at the Royal College of GPs. This is one in a series of podcasts that aims to provide support and resources for primary care networks and the many other organisations working at scale in the UK. I'm really pleased to be joined today by Dr. Nikki Turner, GP in Buckinghamshire and the Clinical Director for the Chalfont's Primary Care Network. Welcome, Nikki.
Hello.
Can you give us a bit of background on how you got involved in primary care networks? What made you want to take on this leadership role?
So in our clinical commissioning group, CCGs in Buckinghamshire, like a lot of commissioning groups, we had localities, and I was the locality rep going to the meetings with the CCG and some of the acute trust providers was joining. So I already had a role doing some of that. So when the PCN came to be, most GPs are so busy, so they weren't. It was not a fight to take on the role. I think the other practices looked to the people who were already doing a similar sort of role and said, would I take it on? Looking at my practice, we were able to arrange backfill so I could take the role on. I'd done some other leadership roles in other organisations, so I was reasonably comfortable taking on the role.
Okay, so you were already an established leader with a system role in your CCG, because from my understanding, it's fairly split, isn't it, in terms of clinical directors. Some of them, like yourselves, are established leaders, but there's also quite a lot of first-time leaders.
I went up to the NHS Expo in Manchester, and it was end of last year now, and it was really interesting. There were some other clinical directors there in the sort of primary care stream, and some of them were really very new, and some of them had come from different backgrounds. There were nurse leaders and I think I'm a pharmacist leader, so they were having to get to grips with the leadership and also working with GPs in a different way.
In practical terms, what does your role entail?
So our PCN is a small PCN, so our locality was originally 80 plus thousand patients, so we split into a 50 and a 32, and we're the 32. So I've only got one session a week. So it is quite a challenge to get it all done in one session. We've just recruited an admin person, which is fantastic, so I don't have to check the emails every week. So for example, yesterday I was meeting with our social prescribers manager to look at how that's working. I met with our PCN pharmacist about some of the quality improvement work in this year's QOF that comes to the quality and outcomes framework that comes to an end around end of life care. And I met with a PPG chair who is interested in knowing how the PCN is going to be working with three PPGs. So that was an interesting meeting. So yes, lots of spinning plates, it feels at times.
Yeah, so PPG would be a patient participation group. That's a big ask, isn't it, in one session a week?
That
degree of commitment. Okay. So tell us a bit more about the Chalfont's Primary Care Network. What's it like? What are the key things that you're hoping to achieve?
In this first year, as we've only just started, our sort of goal for this year is to develop ourselves as a network, understand how we work, develop trusting relationships, develop our communication between the practices, and then starting to look at the other healthcare providers around us, for example, the community pharmacies. That's as far as we've got for the first year.
Well, that's very important, isn't it? Because it's all about relationships at the end of the day.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And the speed of change, if you like, is very rapid, isn't it, in terms of expectations on primary care networks, but you can't really deliver unless you've got a strong foundation. So that sounds really good. Let's move on now to talk about perhaps some of the opportunities and challenges that clinical directors are facing at the moment. Let's try and start with some of the positives. What do you feel as a clinical director of the Chalfont's Primary Care Network? What do you think are your three biggest achievements to date?
Some of them sound quite simple. I mean, the first is we meet every month and everybody comes and everybody contributes. And that might sound quite simple, but actually compared to locality meetings in the previous incarnation with the CCG, not everybody was able to come. So I think people are feeling more invested and wanting to know how to work with our social prescribers and pharmacist. So that's one sort of getting the engagement. The second is we've started to develop trust by sharing significant events between the practices. And we had one involved a community pharmacy with a Dosset box problem. And our rather than each practice sorting it out, our primary care network pharmacist went to the local community pharmacy and was able to, using sort of a process mapping technique, she was able to work out where the problem was and actually has resolved it for all three practices and the pharmacy and the patients. So that was a relatively simple but very successful and easy win because each practice didn't have to sort it out. It was sorted out for us, which was fantastic.
That's brilliant.
Which was really good. And the third thing is we have some complex elderly people and also an outreach from a London teaching hospital, the epilepsy centres in Chalfont St Peter that one of the practices have. And their care is complicated because it often involves our local acute trusts, London trusts and local GPs and local pharmacies with all some very complex medication. And it's early days yet, but the primary care network pharmacist has been starting to work with these residential homes to look at how we can streamline and do their medication reviews and make sure they're getting their medication in a timely way because some of these medicines are so specialised that the community pharmacists don't always have them in stock or they have to come from hospital-based pharmacies. Quite practical things to get started on, which reduces GP work time sorting it out but improves the experience for the patient, hopefully.
It sounds as if you've got a very good PCM pharmacist there.
I mean, yes, we're very lucky. She's fantastic. And it's been really interesting working with her and hearing of her experience of going into different practices because she sees it from a very different angle than the GPs do. And often she's been interacting with the admin frontline staff who are only just starting to understand what a primary care network is. And it's been really nitty gritty things like, you know, where does she sit? Who does she ask for this? What's the phone number of the practice if a patient wants to phone back? I know that sounds really, but these are things that have often taken a lot of time. And I think sometimes, you know, there's been the odd comment like, who's that person at so-and-so's desk? Which I think we've been lucky because our pharmacist has come back and told me these issues and we've been able to go back to the practices and work out how to best arrange this because none of it was intended, but it's more of a lack of understanding of the new staff, their new roles, how to use them best. And I think it's really useful in the supervision time, just not only the clinical side of things but the non-clinical, how are they getting on in the practice. In some of the smaller practices, our pharmacist said it would be possible to go in, sit in a room and leave without talking to somebody if you didn't know who the person it was to talk or what time they had their coffee and those important team building activities that go on in each practice.
So I think that's a really important point, Nikki, because I think, you know, I think that experience is quite general. And I think it reflects the pace of change and the fact that not all members of the teams in member practices really understand the role of a PCN and the extended roles that come with it. And I think it's very important that's dealt with in some ways so that people really understand what's going on in terms of communication, team building, etc., in order, you know, to enable this to be successful.
Yes, so what we've done is some very small things. Each of the practices is now going to have, in addition to their normal notice boards, they're going to have a Chalfont's primary care notice board in their staff room with a description of what a social prescriber does, with a description of who goes to the PCN meetings. And we're going to have a protected learning time for the whole network in springtime, probably April, and with different streams for different members of staff to try and start to build some of that understanding.
Let's move on now to talk about challenges in terms of your own PCN.
Recruitment is time consuming, as I found, but important to get the right people for our network. So For example, although the social prescribers are 100% funded and we've got a we're employing through another organisation, it took us until December to have both in place. It's fantastic having the new people in, but they need to have some degree of supervision, clinical supervision. Some they'll get from their line managers, but they need contact with the practices. And the nitty-gritty of making sure that happens across all the practices in a way that works for them. I think hopefully as new people come in, now we've got the system set up, it will be easier. But certainly in that first iteration, was time consuming.
I'm just going to pick up on that point about clinical supervision, because I think that is interesting, because I don't think that is accounted for, really, is it, in terms of resources and stuff. Many of the new staff, particularly in their new roles, do require some clinical supervision from GPs. How are you managing that?
For example, our PCN pharmacist, who is fantastic and a prescriber, when she started with us, we had a system where she'd phone duty doctor on the day, and there could be a phone call an hour in the first few months. That has settled down now, so that's sort of an ad hoc debrief thing. But then once a week we would sit down and do a more sort of structured sort of thing you might do with a GP trainee, random case analysis, looking at records, looking at decision making. It's valuable and it makes the whole system work better, but it's the same with, you know, with GP training. It takes time for all the, and that's, I found it for all the roles. The social prescribers, they've come from other backgrounds, understanding primary care, understanding who to go to, all of these things are, if you get it right in the start, I think the whole system works better, but it's very time consuming.
Any other particular challenges you wanted to share?
Engagement. When the PCNs first started, a lot of GPs who are sort of my age might have been through a few iterations of the NHS, you know, going back to fund holding, PCGs, and there's a degree of how long the PCN is going to be around for, how much energy do I put into it. So getting a degree of meaningful engagement. I think we're there now, but getting everybody, because everybody's busy, and it's another thing to think about, another meeting to go to. So engagement, so that when decisions are made at PCN level, they are actually the right decisions, and we're not keeping going back to practices to rehash, is that the decision we want to make? And the other one, which you've already touched on, was supervision and making sure that it happens and the time needed for it to happen well. The interesting thing about supervision is the practices that are training practices and have GP trainers are trained to do supervision, are happy to do supervision if they've got the time, but not all the GPs want to do it, have the time to do it, or want to be trained to do it. So that's sort of a thing that we're looking at sort of in our practice as a risk register. That is an area we need to be thinking about going forward, who are going to be the new supervisors.
What do you think the major challenges are for 2020 for clinical directors?
There's been a lot about the new specifications. I think the current ones, looking at, they're all good intentions, so the early cancer diagnosis, the structured medication reviews, the care homes, they still feel quite a big step to ask in our second year. Though we say second year, I only feel like we started in September, so I don't quite feel we've had a year yet. The new additional roles at 100%, we haven't even started going out to recruit yet. So it's not as if we're going to start in April with all the new staff in place. The other big challenge, which I think is not unique to Chalfont, is space. Our premises are not big enough. We are rearranging and getting laptops and computers everywhere we can, but there's a real challenge that I don't know where we're going to put these new people. And I think that's a national problem. We're looking at the first contact practitioners, and we're not quite sure how we're going to fit them in at the moment. So that's a challenge. We're in conversation with the CCG about that. And I think the other thing is the number of meetings you're invited to go to. can be quite overwhelming. And whilst you want to be engaged and know what's going on in the system, I'm a GP and I've got patients to see, and there's only so much time you can be out of your practice, because the practice has still got to run as an individual practice as well.
I mean, NHS England is committed to providing support for clinical directors, as you know, and primary care networks, and is committing a significant funding, 43.5 million in 2019-20 alone. What support have you received personally so far?
So far, we have bid for some money and had a one-day away day for our PCN board in December. I think there is other organisational development money available as yet. There was a meeting last week about how we access it, so we haven't got that yet. Personally, we've spent some of the PCN management money. I've been on some BMA courses, and our admin support is going on a project management course, so we're spending that out of the PCN management money. And I personally had a coach from a previous role from the Leadership Academy that I've continued with, but that's free.
I mean, if you could wave a magic wand, kind of support do you think would be, you know, most useful for clinical directors going forward into 2020?
More of a mentorship role. Just thinking about it, coaching's fantastic, but that's a very different thing. And sometimes I have very specific questions about, for example, influencing something at the system level, and I am unsure who's the best person to speak to, what's the best way to do that.
And so somebody who could give you some advice, really, rather than
advice.
Yes.
Okay. Practical mentorship advice is probably the most useful thing for me personally.
Okay. Are there any resources that you found particularly helpful that you'd like to signpost other clinical directors or PCNs to?
So there's a national WhatsApp group for clinical directors, which is quite busy, but it's useful seeing what other people are doing and the questions people are asking. There's various online resources out there, BMA, RCGP, Ockham Healthcare often have useful summaries of things and pointing people to different things that are going on. There's a useful one this morning in the Ockham blog about the King's Fund have just published something on team working in primary care and micro teams, which is really, really interesting. But it's quite helpful having the headlines rather than having to wade through lots and lots of words.
I mean, there are a number of resources for primary care networks available on the primary care development pages of the Royal College of GPs website, which is at www.rcgp.org.uk. Thank you very much for joining me today, Nikki. And it would be great to catch up with you again maybe later in the year to hear how things are progressing on the ground.
Okay, thank you.
If you would like to listen to further podcasts in this series, a list of topics and associated resources is available on the primary care development pages of the RCGP website at www.rcgp.org.uk. That's all for now, and thank you for listening.